Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody. Happy National Plan for Vacation Day. That should put everyone in a good mood. Last Tuesday in January reminds us to plan our vacation at the start of the year for the rest of the year. Unless, of course, you're someone who has January, February, and March off in some exotic climate. Someone once said the early bird gets to pack their bags early and fly away to a little fun and relaxation. With the frigid temps and growing snow piles in a good part of the country, it's easy to start daydreaming of sunny skies and warm temperatures. I mean, who else is dreaming of sandcastles in the vacation days to come? But for many Americans, those vacation dreams turn out to be just that, a dream. Each year, Melody, Americans leave more than 600 million earned vacation days unused. Our work attitudes combined with a culture of silence in the workplace is keeping workers at their desks instead of using their time off. Well, to change this, today reminds us to focus on taking some personal top days a few times a year to relax, refresh, and rejuvenate. My wife and I are taking our kids and grandkids to Disney World in May, and I'm not so sure that's going to be so relaxing, refreshing, and rejuvenating. In fact, I think we'll need another week when we return to do just that. But hey, we'll have a lot of fun, right?
Oh, I bet you will. I can imagine that you'll have lots and lots of fun.
Yes,
you know what's interesting about those vacation days? I know there's a very large tech company who has eliminated vacation days.
Wow.
Because there were so many that weren't taking them. So, yes, if they want, 2 weeks off, they have to, make arrangements with the management. And most likely they're going to get what they need and so forth, but, with limitations and so forth. But, yeah, so there are a lot of vacation days that aren't taken. So kind of interesting. A lot of money is saved, though. So
there you go.
I don't know why corporations complain. So, but well, let's go ahead and see what gold is doing today. Gold up $10 today at 2054. And we have silver up a little bit, $23.29. So that's up just a little bit. Platinum was down $5 at $933, and palladium was pretty much unchanged at $982. Paper markets today, well, the Dow managed to be up 133 points with the NASDAQ and the S&P down, and the NASDAQ was down 118 points. European markets were all positive. Asian markets, you had a little more pressure on the Shanghai and the Hang Seng. They were negative. Hang Seng was down almost 2.5%, with the Shanghai down almost 2%. 10-year yield still floating above 4%, but it is a little bit lower, 4.04. And crude oil today was up $1.10 at $77.88. And natural gas was up 2% at 2.095. And that's pretty much it. And you know what, David? It was just another day with the same old type of financial news. It's, you know, it just glosses over your eyeballs, you know, because so much of it, you know, and you know, it's just like consumer confidence. It rises for the third straight month. But yet when you go out and talk to and you listen to what Americans have to say, they're all hurting. Many of them are hurting. So it kind of makes you wonder who they are actually interviewing to get these numbers. So we saw the Consumer Board Confidence Index went up 114.8 in January from 108 in December. And always cracks me up. Slightly higher than expectations. That means somebody's fudging. The index, which measures both Americans' assessment of current economic conditions and the outlook for the next 6 months, its highest level since December of 2021. And again, it's like, who are they talking to? That's what I want to know, Dave. Are you there, Dave? Fix your mic, Dave.
It's either who they're talking to or what they're drinking.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the index measuring short-term expectations for income, business, and the job market rose, looks like a little over a point, almost 2 points, to 83.8. Consumer views of current conditions jumped about 14 points to 161. Now, despite the uptick in confidence, consumers' intent to purchase homes, autos, and other big-ticket items declined, albeit modestly. We know that solid consumer spending propelled GDP growth in the fourth quarter, as reported anyway by the Commerce Department. Americans stepped up their spending at retailers during the holiday December, closing out that season on an upbeat note. And whether this, you know, lays the groundwork for what's to come remains to be seen as more and more layoffs start ramping up this year. To the extent they do, we're going to see overall consumer spending drop modestly, if not more, Melody.
And and again, if you go back and look at that GDP for the 3.3% annual pace in the last 3 months of last year, it wasn't any much different. They all said how great it was and so forth, but it wasn't any better than what it was back in, you know, during COVID. So, you know, so how great was it? And it actually dropped. And if you look at the third quarter, and it was 4 point something. And then the last quarter where you have Christmas, 3.3, that's a pretty big drop for the Christmas holiday. So how great was that number? I don't know. It's up to you guys to figure it out. But in my book, it doesn't look like it was all that great. And then we have the home prices in the 20 biggest U.S. metros rose for the 10th consecutive month. That's another record high. And this is all from the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller. The 20 city house price index rose in November compared to the previous months. And this is a broader measure of home prices. The national index rose 0.2% in November and was also up 5.1% over the past year. So, you have Detroit. They posted the biggest year-over-year home price gains. Well, that's probably because they had the lowest price, homes valued at the lowest in this country, considering the condition of Detroit in so many years. It's hard to believe that San Diego was behind Detroit. It's like, some of these just doesn't compute, Dave.
The national median price of a resale home, $382,600 in December. A newly built home, $413,000.
It's ridiculous.
$200,000. We know mortgage rates elevated the latter part of last year, which of course affected the demand, but the lack of supply of homes for sales resulted in pricing yet again. Now, Selma who's the chief economist at CoreLogic, says with mortgage rates now lower and spring home buying demand already around the corner, home prices will continue to rise. It's especially considering the pent-up demand for homes coming from young buyers who've been waiting for lower rates. And she also points to the huge influx of immigrants over the past couple of years. There you go, Melody.
And you got employers are posting 9 million new job openings. Where are these jobs at? Or is it? Well, I think it would be a different report, though, Dave. If there's new job openings, are these jobs that were lost or people laid off? Are they included in those numbers?
Nope.
It's higher from November's. Job openings have gradually but steadily declined since peaking at a record 12 million in March last year, but they remain at historically high levels. Still in a cautionary sign, we have layoffs did rise in December, and the number of Americans quitting their jobs, a sign of relative confidence in their ability to find a better position, dipped to the lowest level since January 2021. You know, when I was looking for jobs and so forth before discount gold and silver almost 30 years ago, I never quit a job until I had my new job. You know, you just didn't move. I mean, you bettered yourself and you always went to a better position, but you never quit your job and then go seek a better job. I don't know, Dave. It's...
Well, they do now because they can.
Yeah.
Because it's been a worker-oriented job market out there, and the younger generations, in particular, seem less inclined toward current employer loyalty, than they do to. Looking for the right opportunity as their career goes along. And I think we've come to see, too, that younger people tend to change not just jobs, but actual careers, types of jobs or industries they're working in more than certainly we did.
I don't know. Do you think it's really a lack of loyalty to the employer, or is it just because we have generations of not really caring? You know, if you're looking, I mean, it was always easier to be hired into a new position if you had a job. I mean, that was just, one of the, it made you a good employee. Why would it made you a better employee?
Yeah,
so
it's a good question. I think perhaps younger people today care about what their employer does out there in society. I mean, we've seen survey after survey over the last 5 years anyway, you know, showing that particularly with bigger corporations, that younger people want them to be more active in this social issue or that.
And that's sad.
We can certainly argue about the efficacy of that, but I'm just saying that seems to be a fact. And
they've been raised where they really don't have to work. There's no accountability. There's no, you know, it just seems like something is missing. And yes, I get that things aren't what they used to be, but you know what what used to be really wasn't all that bad. And there was accountability, and there was, you know, we didn't live with our parents until we were 30 and 35, and we didn't have them paying our health insurance until we were 26. I mean, we were made to go out and earn a living and be responsible. It is harder for the younger kids today to do that because so many jobs left this country. You know, the things have, you know, it is more expensive, and wages haven't gone up to reflect all these. So it is a harder workplace for them. But are you there?
I am.
Okay.
I am. No, I agree to that extent. I believe that, well, we baby boomers, I think a lot of it falls on us as supervisors, managers, heads, policymakers of companies, that we've produced conditions for the younger generations to be growing up or having grown up in the trophy enabling society, you know, kids for years now have been getting just trophies for just participating in, you know, sports or whatever.
A lot of that is government too.
Well, there's no government mandate I think it's just a societal, you know, a societal thing that's just evolved over the years. I mean, there's certainly no law or regulation that says most of these participate sports leagues or private nonprofits.
Starts in your local. Wouldn't it start in your local governments, your school? And again, you know, your school districts and so forth, which is, it's all political anyway, whether it's government or not, it's all political. Yeah. To make those societal changes.
It's possible. It's possible. Sometimes I think we give government too much credit.
It's not credit.
For some things.
Well, it's not credit that I'm getting them.
Credit or blame. You know, it's all this talk about, not just now, but over the last, well, I think almost my entire life, adult life, you know, it's, you know, when oil goes up, it's blamed on the sitting president. When oil goes down, they get credit. You know, same with other aspects of the economy and life. And in a lot of cases, you know, any individual group or institution, you know, is not responsible for what ills us. Now, sometimes it is. Sometimes they are, no question. But I just think that's all kind of related in some way or another.
Well, you know, I think, too, sometimes, you know, you're right about the sitting president. They get blamed. But then again, they're on the watch. It's their watch. And, you know, it's, you know, what they say, what they do behind the scenes, all their various departments and so forth have impacts. Now you have Wall Street and government working together, and you have the central banks working together with everything else, and then not just here in this nation, but around the world, you have central banks working together with all of the world grouping, world banks and BIS and everything else. It's like, I'm glad I hear that music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, you know, it's interesting. Not sure if this had anything to do with their strike, but UPS is announcing layoffs. UPS fell short of their earnings. Reports of drops in shipping volume, both internationally and domestically, in their fourth quarter report. And the company also announced 12,000 layoffs. That's a lot. The workforce reductions will save the company about $1 billion in costs. And she said 2023 was a unique and quite candidly difficult and a disappointing year. And they experienced declines in volume, revenue, and operating profits in all three of our business segments. And wasn't there something about their striking? Didn't they have some kind of labor disputes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're one of the major
funny
ones.
Funny how that happens.
2023. I mean, on the one hand, they reported a 7.5% drop in their daily volume in the U.S. and over 8% internationally, primarily Western Europe, with freight complications continuing in the Red Sea and the Panama and Suez canals. Now, interestingly, in their earnings call, they didn't mention any financial impacts from negotiations with the Teamsters in August over these labor disputes. But there can be little doubt that, you know, that was a pretty striking and pretty significant pay jump for a lot of UPS workers. You know, it's even if profits were still flowing in, there's no question. I mean, pay raises have a compounding effect. you know, because if you get
it'd be 2%, it'd be interesting to know how many of those 12,000 employees were actually ones that were on strike.
I would think that, I don't know about employees per se, but certainly I would guess the bulk of the positions being eliminated were those positions covered by labor contracts. I doubt that there were records kept. It could be. I mean, it's probable that I don't know if in this case the strike, the picketing that went on was just was a limited sample that rotated every day, or if there was, I forget if there was a massive force out in the streets, but. Anyway, they're still looking at a 2024 operating margin, profit margin of between 10 and 10.6%. That ain't too chintzy.
No.
But I'm sure that assumes, you know, these layoffs taking effect over the course of the year.
Also, there's a report about the how payrolls, and I think what's interesting about the small business payrolls, they've moderated as 2023 came to an end. Now, this is, you know, from the too big to fail, of course, Bank of America. They say that the payroll payments did rise 1.7% in December at small businesses. And but this is what's interesting is the pace of payroll growth has slowed significantly from the peak in March of 2022. So, and again, they're going to say, well, this is not negative. Well, you know, it slows, it shows that it slowed significantly. So, but they're looking at it that it could be more of a sustainable payroll growth, which I think when you look at what we predict the future to be, it's probably not a very strong, sustainable. Dave.
Well, we know that small businesses, typically businesses with less than 5 million in revenue, have been affected over the past couple of years by high inflation, plus the high costs that were run up during the pandemic and the resulting labor crunch. But these labor shortages are beginning to ease, or have begun to ease, and wage inflation, they say, is starting to come down. Now, the trends differ by industry. There's some slowing of payroll growth in lodging, that is hotels, restaurants, and retail, though continuing strong job growth in these areas somewhat offsetting this impact, according to Bank of America anyway. Healthcare industry, on the other hand, still seeing strong payroll growth, reflecting those post-pandemic staffing increases and higher demand for health services among the growing and aging baby boomers, Melody.
Okay. This one's real quick before we move on is the it'll be interesting to see how the U.S. is going to respond to what happened in Jordan and how it's going to affect oil prices. And there was a surprise for oil traders came from Saudi Aramco, which abandoned a plan to boost its oil output capacity, which is a significant reversal That's raising questions about their view on future demand. Bloomberg estimates Saudi Arabia needs an oil price of $108 to balance its budget and to meet domestic spending by its sovereign wealth fund. So that'll be kind of interesting to see if where that's going to take us, and particularly if there's, and there's no doubt about it, with what's going on in Yemen and everything else in Jordan, and you can't tell me that how they're keeping the prices to where they're at now. Come on. You know, it's just like everything else. It's just like, even at the discussion of what is actually happening would have raised various prices in oil and gold, and you'd see pressure on the paper markets. But it just doesn't seem to matter. That's how much control they really have. And I know a lot of people probably don't think so, but you just can't tell me with what's going on that there shouldn't, what is keeping fear at bay and panic at bay?
Well, I wonder if we'll look back in a couple of years and see the impact, or what kind of impact the Saudis' new LIV golf tour has had on its finances, and how much of an increase, or what proportion of an increase in their oil price can be drawn back. I mean, it's still fairly modest. There aren't a whole lot of professional golfers in the LIV Tour, but for those who are, I mean, they're getting whopping contracts in the tens of millions and the hundreds, multi-hundreds of millions of dollars. I think I remember reading back in the earlier last year that they had offered, I think, Tiger Woods $800 million to participate, and there are already a couple of more notable golfers who've switched over to the LIV Tour that are getting in the several hundreds of millions. Now that's, you know, probably a minor portion of the sovereign funds bucket of money, but boy, if I'm an everyday Saudi. And I'm hearing what they're paying Americans and other Europeans to participate in that great game we, some of us love. That the way I'd say, hey, I want a piece of that action, Prince.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of things. It confirms just how out of control everything is. I mean, come on, hundreds of millions of dollars for golf, how many hundreds of millions of dollars for baseball players and football, millions of, I don't know what the highest amount of for a football player gets.
Well, long-term contract, I think, let's see, it's 250 or 300 million. Dollars as of now. I mean, we're talking 25, 30 million a year, a little bit more. I think a couple of NBA players are earning 50 million. But the 25, 30 million for 17 regular season games. That's a good hourly rate, wouldn't you say?
But I mean, it's just, doesn't anybody think it's mind-boggling? It just goes to show how worthless our money is.
I bet you a majority of season ticket holders find it mind-boggling, and yet they're the ones who lay out, you know, 150 a ticket per game, plus their however much it costs for their seating licenses now. It's gotten crazy.
And where does it end?
It doesn't.
There, there is an end, because it's on it, because it is crazy. What do you think? Does anybody believe that eventually they'll be making $800 billion or $1 billion? That's what I meant to say. $1 billion? No, it will end. Things will get adjusted. We just don't know at what high end it will change.
Well, it might end if, you know, the financial markets destroy the wealth of the billionaire owners of these teams.
No, it'll destroy the wealth of the people who buy those season tickets. It's going to destroy the wealth of those people, which in turn will destroy the wealth of the, or a combination of both, perhaps.
But
a lot of wealth will be wiped out. It just doesn't go on. Where the next thing you know, a home, the median size or the median home price is going to be $1.5 million. With people making a minimum wage of $30, ain't gonna happen. Somewhere, I mean, we've already disconnected from reality to some degree. So, now it's gonna be interesting. And I know you wanted to talk about, we're running out of time. Chinese leader Xi Jinping, they've and again are reasserting the dominance of his Communist Party over the state's duties and actions. But I think he's always done that. I don't think he's pulled back and is ramping it up. But Beijing, a powerful and largely secretive back channel with political power brokers in other countries, he could reshape the norms of international relations. I think he's already doing this, bringing those international relations more in line with his interests, with Beijing's interests. And an obscure party bureau that manages relations with political parties in other countries is beginning to take center stage in China's foreign relations, and its current chief is likely to soon become China's next foreign minister. And that guy is veteran Chinese diplomat Liu Xinchao. And he's taken a very high-profile portfolio after former foreign minister, foreign minister was ousted last year, and has reportedly been selected as the top candidate to replace him. And he's already met with Blinken, the Secretary of State, on the day before Taiwan's elections earlier this month. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, Dave. And the international department status and purview expanded in 2017 when Xi called for a new model of party-to-party relations.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess the party-to-party aspect works with, you know, authoritarian countries, one to another. Dictator states. I'm not so sure that works with the West, most of the West anyway. Even though they're, you know, I mean, most of the Western democracies or republics, however you want to characterize them, are, I mean, certainly they have multiple major parties, but. You know, we know that the traditions in the Western, those Western democracies, you know, you work with whomever is in power, the head of state. Now, that's at least on one level. Perhaps on this level that Xi is working toward, and we know that must go on. Today, that certainly there are unofficial back channel discussions between Chinese, Russian officials and various party officials in this country, you know, members of Congress, reps and senators, heads of corporations, And I mean, part of that is to get the inside scoop on certain things. Others are probably part of an attempt to get information that they otherwise wouldn't be privy to. Some of it's to develop, I think, their spy networks. But this is very interesting. We know that their foreign policy is taking them to Africa, Latin America, and Pacific Island nations. That'll be very interesting to watch as this moves forward.
And we're moving forward into our break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody Taking Care of Other Businesses segment. You know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, I want to make this last segment today in honor of the three Army reservists all from Georgia who died in the Sunday drone strike on a base in Jordan that also wounded more than 40 others. Sergeant William Jerome Rivers, 46, Army Specialist Kennedy LaDon Sanders, who's 24, and Specialist Brianna Alexandria Moffitt, who was 23. Here's what we've been hearing. U.S. Forces may have mistaken an enemy drone for an American one and let it pass unchallenged onto the base known as Tower 22, where it exploded as the soldiers slept. An enemy drone was flying in at a low altitude at the same time a U.S. drone was returning to Tower 22, according to a preliminary report. One of the trailers where troops slept sustained the brunt of the Houthi strike, or whomever it really was. Surrounding trailers received limited damage from the blast and flying debris. The attack has Congress clashing intensely over the degree of American involvement in what's become a growing conflict in the Middle East. The Biden administration told reporters today, in fact, it was Biden himself who told reporters that he's decided on what and when a response will occur. Lawmakers are trying to shape what it looks like and whether it draws the U.S. into a wider regional war. Now, details of the Sunday attack emerged as the president faces a difficult balancing act, blaming Iran on the one hand and looking to strike back in a meaningful way without causing the feared wider escalation of the Gaza conflict. So we remember Mr. Rivers, Ms. Sanders, and Ms. Moffitt. A new, powerful, well-funded political movement is rising fast in America. They're called the techno-optimists. According to Axios's Jim Vandehei and Mike Allen, this group is building impressive, if disorganized, political muscle through social media and podcasts, new journalism projects, and political donations and activism. They're mostly, not completely, but mostly rich, white, middle-aged men with tech jobs or work in tech companies or investment funds. Techno-optimism is an imperfect name for the movement, they say, but it captures an animating spirit of an emerging ideology. It's a general philosophy, not a political party, though some of the billionaire tech investor funding and fueling it talk privately of one day soon starting one. An actual political party is probably fantasy. The egos are enormous, interests diverse, and attention spans short. For now, though, think of it as a loose affiliation of some fairly powerful people with big followings who share platforms, ideas, styles, and yes, beliefs. These moguls have a social media platform. Unfortunately, it's Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter, which has shifted from a hotbed for mainstream media groupthink as recently as 2020 to a hotbed of tech anti-establishment groupthink for this particular upcoming election. They high-five each other with retweets and X-only interviews and have a fairly common ideology. That includes unrestricted free speech, pro-artificial intelligence views, anti-mainstream media, deep skepticism of DEI, political correctness, and elite consensus. They also have provocative philosophical manifestos, most notably investor Mark Andreessen's The Techno-Optimist Manifesto, which declares this: technology is the glory of human ambition and achievement, the spearhead of progress and the realization of our potential. Whew. They have a growing media ecosystem that operates online and gets heavy engagement on X. These writers, like Matt Taibbi, who used to be one of my favorites, female Barry Weiss, who I also tend to like, was surprised to see her involved in this, and Glenn Greenwald, often promote each other and get boosts on big audience podcasts like Joe Rogan's. Weiss, who's founder of the Free Press, told Axios that this ecosystem is growing by treating listeners, viewers, and readers like adults who can handle complexity, and by taking a posture on tech that's more curiosity than knee-jerk criticism. Well, I like that thinking. She added, "We articulate the things that people talk about in private, but are hesitant to openly discuss or debate in public." She went on to say, "We give people language to describe things that they're noticing and are, well, maybe wary of, but don't yet have the vocabulary to explain or articulate." Then there's Kara Fisher, who'll be out at the end of February with the Burn Book, a memoir that's tough on Silicon Valley. It's critical of this crowd and their taunting tactics. She chalks it up to billionaire boredom and the need to be relevant. It's a false dichotomy, she said. And if you're not with us, you're against this argument by someone who can't think clearly anymore. You can be bullish on many new innovations, she continues, and still be worried about its implications. But the tech bros' combined influence on politics is real and growing. You saw it when Ron DeSantis chose to announce his campaign, not on Fox News, but on X. And he did it in an interview with David Sachs, a tech investor and co-star of the widely downloaded All In podcast. He's far from alone. Musk, Andreessen, Ben Horowitz, Bill Ackman, many other techno-optimist allies are inserting themselves into the politics of everything. Horowitz, who's co-founder and general partner at Andreessen Horowitz, announced in a December blog post that partners at his venture capital firm will for the first time give money to support candidates who align with their vision and values, specifically for technology. Horowitz told us that AI will revolutionize warfare. Yeah, that's part of the potential problem. Financial systems and consumers' daily lives. So tech, beyond the behemoths of Microsoft, Google, and the others, needs clout. But nobody represents little tech, he said. Regulation of things like AI and crypto may seem small now, but getting them right is actually, in his words, existential for our nation. Techno-optimists have a singular presidential candidate right now. It's the would-be spoiler and blowhard RFK Jr. But if they decide a third-party candidate isn't viable, they seem much more likely to turn to Donald Trump than President Biden. They're universally proud free market capitalists who find Biden at 81 too old and too approving of thought and word policing. Bottom line, it's not clear how many votes they can actually move, but tens of millions of American, especially white men outside of big cities, listen to, read them, or follow them. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. I have a piece on the Fed's battle with inflation that asks, landing? What landing? Yes, another week, another drama, 2 or 10. It's the last week of the first month, the new year unfolds. The White House finds itself in the firing line on how to respond to the latest attack on U.S. troops in the Middle East. The Chinese company Evergrande, whose financial woes triggered global interest in China's property crisis, received a liquidation order from a Hong Kong court yesterday or the other day. The ruling, which comes more than 2 years after Evergrande first defaulted on its public debt, is going to leave the offshore entity under new management while its assets and debts are carved up. And oil prices fell after hitting their highest level since November as traders trying to figure out the impact of these separate attacks in the Middle East. The move follows a jump in oil on Friday after Yemeni Houthi rebels attacked a shipping vessel carrying Russian fuel. President Biden has made some strong claims in recent days about shutting down the southern border with Mexico as he tries to salvage a deal in Congress that would also provide more money for Ukraine and Israel. The deal's been in the work for months and seemed to be nearing bipartisan completion in the Senate before it began to fall apart, particularly after Donald Trump said he doesn't want it to happen. And last but not least, though, it's Fed week. When tomorrow the Federal Open Market Committee is virtually certain to leave interest rates unchanged at least until March. The Fed's policy-making organ is widely expected to announce it'll leave benchmark rates unchanged at their current range of 5.25% to 5.5%. Widespread confidence comes after recent reports showing the economy growing at a much more rapid pace than expected, with inflation easing. Columbia Business School econ professor Britt House says the Fed has threaded the needle of the economy very artfully with that kind of Goldilocks scenario. Well, we know the Commerce Department reported last Thursday that GDP grew at a much faster than expected 3.3% pace in the fourth quarter, driven by a still solid job market and stronger than expected consumer spending. However, because inflation is still well above the Fed's 2% target, it's at 3.4 roughly in December, that also opens up the door to what Ned Davis Research Chief Economist Alejandra Grindle is calling a no landing scenario. In describing an economy that's overheating, Grindle noted, no landing means above trend growth and also above trend inflation. as we know all too well, higher inflation. It's been a stubborn problem since the pandemic when prices spiked over, well, price increases spiked over 9%, their highest level since the early 80s. The Fed responded with a series of 11 interest rate hikes that took its benchmark rate from around zero in March 2022 to its highest in more than 22 years. Plus, the Fed's been unwinding its historically high balance sheet, shedding itself of $1.3 trillion in treasuries and mortgage-backed securities since hitting a peak of $8.96 trillion in April 2022 to $7.677 trillion last Wednesday. As of its latest reading last month, current inflation rate, again, 3.4%, still 70% above the Fed's target. Combination of higher rates and inflation have hit consumers and businesses, particularly small businesses, particularly hard. Analysts say this no landing scenario also means more strain on household budgets and those with variable rate debt, like credit cards or adjustable rate mortgages. Now, while still elevated, inflation is continuing to inch lower, possibly some say giving the Fed incentive to start cutting interest rates sometime this year. Brett House says that looks like the soft landing has been more or less achieved and is likely to be sustained. Now, Jessica Dickler says for consumers, that could mean relief from higher borrowing costs as long as inflation continues to cooperate. Still, some experts haven't ruled out a recession. One of them, Mizuho's Dominic Konstam, believes that the disinflation of today sets the stage for unemployment for tomorrow. He says you're going to have a hard landing, which looks soft until it's hard. And it's going to be hard, I'm sure of that. It's going to happen at the end of this year. So right now, it's just a timing thing. And index fund advisors Mark Higgins warns the real danger here is that the Fed loosens prematurely, which is exactly what they did in the late 1960s. The risk of allowing inflation to persist, he continued, still far outweighs the risk of triggering a recession, adding their failure to do this in the late 60s is one of the major factors that allowed inflation to become entrenched in the 70s. Well, the National Association for Business Economics December survey shows that 76% of economists believe the chances of recession in the next year is 50% now or less. We will see to what extent that's optimistic, pessimistic, or realistic. Higgins observed, in the short term, a recession will be painful. In the long term, we are better off doing what's necessary to return to price stability. I say, let's wait a little longer and see how growing supply chain disruptions in the Red Sea and Panama Canal and how these tensions in the Middle East play out and how they affect the prices of consumer goods in the coming months. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Please, please be safe out there.
Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got the